This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm Chris.
I'm Gordon.
And I'm Croaky Old Phil.
Welcome back, Croaky Old Phil.
Thank you. You should have heard me last week. Well, you couldn't have heard me.
We couldn't have heard you last week, no. You're back on deck, which is the main thing.
I'm crawling along the deck.
Well, the Titanic's not quite sinking yet.
No.
Not like other things that have been almost
the chaos of Titanic in Canberra over the weekend of the last week, hasn't it?
Wasn't that unenlightening? It was bad behaviour.
Oh, well, I think it's ego and temperament over talent, quite frankly.
Hissy fits.
God's truth.
But if you look on the bright side, by this time next year, we could all be Prime Minister. For a day.
But I like the expression that somebody, when they said that when you're getting older and there's something goes wrong with your brain, they ask you who the Prime Minister of Australia is, who would you tell them?
Well, that's not a fair question anymore,
not
is it?
A fair question at all.
First question is, what time is it?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. It's very sad, and unfortunately, that politicians seem to be on high rotation.
But nothing's changed, really.
With this latest alteration, exactly.
Nothing's changed. They just rearranged the deck chairs on the Titanic, I think, because I don't think they're going to last that long, by the way they're going on, the way the people are talking about it.
But maybe the US administration will get this guy's name right.
Well, they've already phoned Mr. Morrison.
What did they call him, though?
I don't know. ScoMo, perhaps?
Oh, no. You can't do that anymore. One of the side effects has been the quietening down immediately of the rampant right from some of the shock jocks in Sydney.
Oh, yes. Well, they got a real blast from Mr. Turnbull.
Well, they
and
did.
Also in the paper from one of our ex-Prime Ministers, Mr. Rudd.
Yes. Yes. And I think Mr. Jones might be actually having a week's holiday.
No, he deserves it.
Because there's nothing else to be taught. And he will say, of course, that he's giving the new Prime Minister room to move and get things in order so that when he comes back in a week's time, he'll be able to give him some advice and tell him what he's done wrong.
Wasn't it Mr. Jones that Scott Morrison told him he would never appear on his show? I have a vague feeling that there was one of them that they don't like Mr. Morrison because he said, no, you can go and jump in the lake sort of thing, you know. They wouldn't do anything.
Well, why would you appear on those shows unless you fully agreed with everything they said? Because
exactly.
They don't listen. They're a talk show.
Yeah. Well, this is the problem with them, you know. But fortunately, we don't get either of them down here in Victoria. I don't think they would rate very well.
They live in a bubble and they think they're running the country on Sydney radio.
Well, of course, the Fourth Estate really do have a lot to say in running the country because they're the people that put up all the things in the papers and the televisions and the radios and everything and get the politicians to follow them. And then when things go wrong, they don't blame themselves. They blame the government, you know.
It looks like we'll have an opportunity maybe in May or sometime earlier to re-elect the People's Parliament.
Well, do you reckon?
Certain people won't be able to claim their seats anymore that are in the current parliament.
Yeah, well, with the poll that they took the day after that happened,
that was a very broad poll,
but there's going to be, they reckon that 24 people, there'd be 24 seat losers or something
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. Mm. So that will change the complexion immediately.
Yeah.
But even if the same mob get in, there'll be lots of their people that don't. So...
But the ultra-right-wing conservatives will probably be able to stay there because they're in safe seats, which will be fun. Anyhow, we've got to live with what we've got apparently at the moment, and there's a saying that you get the politicians you deserve. So,
well, I think what it really shows is that the two-party system doesn't serve us particularly well.
There was a very interesting comment from ex-Prime Minister Howard, and I don't agree with Mr. Howard on very much. I do agree with him on the gun control, which was absolutely brilliant. But the other thing was that he said that they should be made to work before they get into politics. So I've been saying this for years. They should do at least 10 years
Street
in an ordinary
experience.
Job before they even allowed to sit in Parliament, because they don't have any experience whatsoever. They go straight out of university and straight into the political scene. And they've got
the silver spoon in their mouth.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
They shouldn't be allowed to make laws until they've obeyed some.
Yes, well, there's a good one, yes.
Oh, there you are.
But they should work for 10 years. You know, as John Howard pointed out himself, he said, I worked for 10 years as a lawyer. Well, that doesn't sort of, that gets you into some of the general public, but they should be made to work in shops or building sites or something or other.
You start
and really
to see
get
the reality of life.
The reality of life is what they don't get. That's the problem, yeah.
So you can't say things like, let them eat cake?
Oh, well, they probably
is that
do.
Frowned upon?
Well, probably, yeah.
Well, not that we're grumpy old men, but we have seen a lot of this previously in our lifetimes.
I don't know how many prime ministers I've lived through since I turned 21 and was able to vote for the first time.
Mm. And isn't it interesting? You get the right to vote, but you don't lose the right to vote as you get older.
No,
you take that with you to the grave.
No, I think after 80 you don't have to vote.
You're not. It's not compulsory.
Not compulsory. You can still vote, but you don't have to. Mm.
But
you don't have to vote anyhow. All you have to do is go and get your name crossed off the electoral roll to say that you have attended.
Yeah.
And you can just write a Happy Christmas or just put a cross through it. Virginia Trioli was on the television one morning and she said, I don't vote for any of them. I go in, I get my name crossed off, and I put a big cross right through the both papers and put them in the thing. And she said, I don't vote for anybody, and therefore I don't have to worry about what I say to any of them when I interview them, which is a very good way of being.
I thought you had to draw a picture of a donkey.
Oh, yes, something like that.
And then it's counted as a donkey vote.
Yes.
it's
very difficult living under those circumstances. And they live in a fishbowl, of course, in Canberra. I hate to live in that sort of environment as a workplace.
Not good. Not good at all. Here we got Kim Carnes. She's got a little bit of something to say. I think you know this song.
It's a good one.
Her hair is hollow gold, her lips sweet surprise. Her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll turn her music on you. You won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow. She got Betty Davis eyes.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And you're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. We've got a couple of birthdays coming up at the moment. Rene Richards, on the 19th of August 1934, she was born. But she was born and lived for the first 41 years of her life as a man. And
yes.
Then transitioned. As an adult, that would be a very hard thing to have done basically halfway through your life. And she'd had a professional life where she was an ophthalmologist.
That means looking after your eyes, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
I thought it was something to do with moths.
Oh, no.
An entomologist.
But then she transitioned and rebuilt herself in this new form and in the sporting field.
Yeah, when he was a very good tennis player as well as being an ophthalmologist. So, of course, changing gender, she still kept playing tennis. And she was one of the people that did that match against one of the other top tennis players. He was a bit older, of course. He wasn't in his top form. And I think they had a tennis match. I vaguely remember something about it. But
Billie Jean King came along later in the picture.
Yeah. But she was a woman and she was outed actually as a lesbian during her tennis career.
Yeah, but the big fuss came about when the US Open was coming up just after Renee had transitioned.
That's right.
And they basically said, you can't enter as a woman. And his quote was, you can't tell me what I can or cannot do. And that's when the lawyers came in. It turns out he never actually intended to play in the US Open. Then I guess it's something that still hasn't been settled today, is men who have transitioned to women aren't considered women.
Well, look at what they did with the VFL women's side. There was one of the local transitioned women. She wanted to play AFL women's football, and they wouldn't let her because they said she was too big and strong to be a player. But it's, you know, I thought when they take some of the transitioning drugs, their muscle power reduces.
Well, yes.
You know, so it's not as strong.
It's a complicated comparison. You can't say no because you were a man, because you're becoming a woman, but you're still going to have some physical attributes.
You're probably heavier bones or something or other. Yeah, I don't know.
So I'm glad I don't have to make the decision of who can play where.
No, I don't know, but good luck to them if they'd want to do, if that's the way it has to be, what's the way it's got to be, and good luck to everybody that wants to do it. And,
the point of transitioning, you know, though, is to become the person that you feel you are.
Yeah, that's right. That's the way you feel about it.
It shouldn't be discouraged at all.
Yeah, well, look at what happened with Chelsea Manning going on another thing. He was a soldier in the army and was a Wikipedia spy or whatever you want to call him, and got jailed.
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks, yes.
He was a WikiLeaker.
He had thousands of documents.
That's right.
Well,
and of course,
videos.
And when he was in, they jailed him. They got him into jail and all the rest of it. And he wanted to transition while he was in jail.
And did, yes.
One of the last things President Obama did was to pardon him and let him free. Let her free, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, now, did that transition occur whilst she was in jail and under Obama administration?
Yes.
So
I don't think it would have happened under Trump.
I was going to say, I don't think it would happen under Trump, indeed.
No.
No, because the army paid for those medical expenses.
That's right, yes. So it was, I admire her for her courage in sort of doing what she did, sort of letting everybody know what was going on in the world. As well, and then having the strength of character to transition when she wanted to do.
Yeah, Caitlyn Jenner is another one of these people who are in the news. They were famous before they became famous a second time around.
Well, famous as a male athlete.
Olympic medalist, actually, yes. But I had never seen Caitlyn Jenner until last week, I think it was, or it could have been a couple of weeks ago. It was on the television on the Adam Hills show, and she was a guest. I didn't realise she was so tall. She's a tower, you know.
Very large person.
Very, very nice figure. Not overweight or anything, but of course she had heels on, of course, which made her look even taller. But
I don't know if it's because we've known him and then her for decades, but I don't see her as attractive as, say, Chelsea Manning, who was a fairly petite, feminine-looking man who is quite an attractive woman now.
Yeah.
So quite a different...
Chelsea's quite pretty, actually.
Yeah.
She's got quite... But Caitlin's, I thought she's got an interesting face, but it wasn't masculine. It wasn't a masculine face. It was quite a feminine face, but...
Yeah. Well, think what it's been through living with Kardashians.
Well...
So you're not going to come out of that unscathed.
Yes, there's the truth.
That's going to hurt.
That's the truth, ain't it? Yes, yeah. But it's just amazing. But it's, well, good luck to them. But there have been a few trailblazers in the world, and there's been a lot of actors in Hollywood too. I can't remember any of their names. So there's a lot of transgendered actors now in Hollywood, actors, men to women actors and women to men actors.
I think the beauty is now that people have got the opportunities and they've had the pioneers ahead of them so that they can now transition to whichever gender they identify.
Yep.
And in fact, it's becoming commonplace. So they're not freaks.
No.
Anymore. There is no speciality anymore.
It's mostly in television. It's not in the movies. A lot of the transgendered people are in television, acting in television series and what have you, but they're still not being portrayed in the movies, because if they want a transgendered person in the movies, they usually get somebody that they make them out to be transgendered, which is causes a bit of conflict in the community when they do that. Yeah, okay. But there's a lot of thing about gay men playing straight men or straight men playing gay acting parts on the film or the television. And they say, look, how many gay actors have played straight for years? Look, look at Rock Hudson, for instance. He played straight for years. And a lot of them have played straight for years. But it's just so stupid. But anyhow.
On the 1st of September 1939 was born Lily Tomlin.
The gorgeous Lily. She makes me laugh.
Well, yes, she is.
Which is good because she's a comedian.
Yes. But she's also a very good actor. She was in The West Wing.
I don't watch TV.
Well, she was in The West Wing, and a very, very good part she played too. Very straightforward secretary for some reason. She was great in that. I loved her.
I could just see her on the phones. Oh. One ringy dingy.
One ringy dingy.
Wow. I mean, this is the beauty of Lily. She created a few characters which identify her immediately.
Oh, God, yes. Yep. Perhaps to the older generation, though,
well,
though Chris.
Possibly,
not
those, yeah, because
so much of the younger people.
I mean, in the early 70s, she was on the TV in Australia, it was an imported program, so there was a fair amount of political content in it that we didn't understand.
She was in Laugh-In, wasn't
but she
Laugh-In?
Was in a show called Laugh-In with Rowan and Martin, and this is where some of her characters came out.
Yes,
and this is why she is so well known to a certain group in our community. But she is a lesbian lady.
Oh yes, she's been out. She's been with her partner for years.
Exactly. And she's had no problems, it would seem, being as she is. Mm. But once again, a pioneer, a real pioneer in TV playing these characters. Now, we've got a little skit here to play for you who don't know her. And yes, Phil, she does play a telephonist. Now, who or what were telephonists? What was their job?
Well, back in the ancient times.
Yes.
A telephone exchange was a building with a predominantly women sitting at panels, answering the phone and asking who people wanted to talk to and then connecting them.
They'd have to put a plug into a hole in the panel.
Yep. Yes, to link the two calls.
To answer the thing, and then they'd say, who do you want to speak to? And then they'd pick the outside plug up and put it into the hole that was corresponding to the call they wanted to make.
So nowadays we have computers doing all that.
Yes.
Or, say, at a reception job, the actual physical connection for the call is a lot easier than using cables.
Yeah.
But it made for very good comedy.
Because she would interrupt and she would interact with the person calling, and that was something that telephonists really should not do.
Well, we had one of those exchanges where I lived in WA, and The girl on the switchboard could tell you almost everything that was going on in the town.
Yes. Oh, that's the way to do it, I think.
Oh, yes.
Definitely. Anyway, Lily is talking about J. Edgar, who in fact is J. Edgar Hoover. Well, not really. She's not really talking to him. It's a skit. And she's sending up the...
Head of the CIA, wasn't he? Yeah, he was also one of us because his boyfriend... He was gay. His boyfriend was, I forget his name, but they're buried together.
Yeah.
Beside one another.
Well, I hope they're dead.
In Hollywood. Yeah, in the Hollywood lawn or something, rather. They're buried both beside one another.
Mm. Here we go.
One ringy-dingy. Is this Mr. Hoover? Mr. J. Edgar Hoover? Good. Then I have reached the party to whom I am speaking. Mr. Hoover, this is Miss Tomlin from the telephone company. It is my duty, Mr. Hoover, to discuss with you some of the abuses of your instrument. Yes, 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 it does sound rather un-American, doesn't it? Now then, Mr. Hoover, I have your file here before me. Oh, yes, I'm sure that you have a file on me, too. After all, turnabout is fair play. Yes, it does sound perverted. Now then. Mr. Hoover, Mr. Hoover, I have a delicate problem. I find that you and your agents have indulged in the illegal and unfair practice of wiretapping. Wiretapping. Oh, Mr. Hoover, listening to other people's conversations. Oh, how do I know? From listening to your calls, that's how I know. Oh, no. Mr. Hoover, don't be rude. I'll make a loud noise into my mouthpiece and perhaps deafen you for life. Now, Mr. Hoover, may I ask, do you have a telephone directory handy? Good. Let us turn to page VIII and recite in unison. It is a crime under both federal and state law to use a telephone for annoying or harassing purposes, or to knowingly permit a phone under one's control to be used for such purposes. This includes calls in which the caller remains silent, etc., 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 etc. Oh, you do know the law, Mr. Hoover. Now, Jedgar, listen. Is there anybody at your place listening in? Everybody, good. Let's get right to the nitty-gritty. There's absolutely no reason for your people to skulk about, electronically speaking. You can get all the information you need from us. Probably a lot more accurately, too. Good. Good, then we will be in touch. Oh, and Mr. Hoover, before you go, I must tell you how much I admire your vacuum cleaner. Hello? Mr. Hoover? Well, why do you suppose he got so huffy?
Love Radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Turn us on anywhere.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Oh, I do miss Lily Tomlin.
She's a very funny lady.
She is a very funny lady indeed, Gordon. Thank you. But she's happily married now and probably at her, well, how old is she? She's 79.
I think she's basically retired from the comedy circuit.
She deserves to be retired.
She's had the odd guest role on Will and Grace and a few shows like that.
Has she? Oh, right.
Which is nice because it just puts her face out there
out
again.
Out there still. Well, let's get to some serious stuff.
Yes, it's sad to actually have to recall that on the 14th of August, 1928, a series of massacres began, and they were massacres of some members of the Indigenous community.
Quite a few members of the Indigenous community, actually.
Oh, no. Surely the press reports of the events. 1928, I mean, there was newspapers around and there was radio.
But I don't think that they knew how to count.
Oh.
Because when you, it all happened at Coniston Station, which is way out past Alice Springs. There was a dingo trapper had stolen one of the Aboriginal men's wives, and he didn't get any payment for it. So he shot the trapper. And then the news came out, and there was a policeman in the area, and he said, righto, we're going out there. And they went out there, and they started killing all the Indigenous people in the area.
Revenge.
Revenge.
And is this correct? I'm reading a little report here that says that from the 14th of August to the 18th of October 1928, not even 100 years ago, 2 months' worth of shooting. Indiscriminate. It was murder, wasn't it?
Well, it was basically murder, yeah. Yeah, but they just got away with it. But the people would like to have the anniversary of the Coniston massacres done like an Anzac Day
to remember the fallen yeah.
Because they were just hunted down and shot. And it was just an awful, awful bloody situation. I guess they felt that the whites were the superior race and all the rest of it, you know.
Well, it was white man's law that they were invoking, that we can do this.
Yeah.
But white man's law doesn't say you can massacre.
No, but according to the
might
the,
is right.
Yeah, the official figures said there were 30 killed, but then the Indigenous people say there was probably more than 100, and one figure even went up to 110 were killed.
Today we have the internet, and everybody can know everything that's going on virtually anywhere.
Almost instantly.
Yeah. Now, in 1928, they would have had radio communications between major stations.
Yeah, but would they have had it out there?
I would expect that these Northern Territory policemen figured no one would ever hear about this because dead men don't tell tales.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible attitude to have, quite frankly. Yeah,
but I'm not sure when the pedal radio was, but you know, that thing that the Australians invented, the pedal radio, so that they could contact one another from around the world.
Yeah, but that was for School of the Air.
School of the Air
the
and all those
doctor.
Sort of things, yeah, but they could use it. But it
but,
was,
yeah, I don't, whether, was the only form of communication. And these events were non-verifiable. Because it happened out of sight.
That's why they said there was the thing was 30, and there was the Indigenous people know that there was over 100.
But they didn't have a voice.
They didn't have a voice. That's right. Mm.
Not very good at all. So it's interesting that of late a lot of the events of the early couple of centuries here in Australia are now getting more exposure of the actual occurrences that and the reasons behind them, and we're looking at them with 21st century eyes and our current attitudes. And I'm afraid that we can't be all that proud of our forefathers.
Well, there's little to be proud of, and it's quite frankly unbelievable behaviour.
Mm. But that wasn't the only one. They've done a map where they've shown where all the these massacres were occurring, all in Australia, right around Australia, in those times. Somebody's drawn up a map of.
Yeah, there were 200 or more.
Yeah, and
but if they're all in remote communities,
well, some of them weren't that remote when it was happening.
Yeah, I just find it incredible that that kind of justice.
Well,
want of a better word.
I don't think it's justice. It's just murder.
Well, we don't see it now that
no,
way.
No, but then again, it's one of those dreadful situations that happened, and I think that the Indigenous population have got a right to have some sort of memorial made to that dreadful event, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, they're living with the loss of life.
Yeah.
And, we've apologised once. We can do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the problem seems to have been that there is no guilt associated with these events because they were done out of sight.
Hmm.
And it's just got away with it once. However, on the 23rd of August 1966, the Gurindji tribal elder Vincent Lingiari led 200 Aboriginal workers off their jobs at the Wave Hill cattle station, 800 kilometres south of Darwin, where they worked for the British pastoral company Vesti.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Vesti once again seemed to think that these unnamed and unrecognisable people were not on the same social plane as themselves.
Basically slaves.
Yeah. Mm. And we were talking, I think, last week, Gordon, about
slavery,
slave labour here in Australia, mm-hmm. which still goes on.
Yeah.
But here we are, back in 1966, the people there stood up for themselves. They withdrew their labour.
And they did it very successfully, too, because they shut the whole of Wave Hill Station down. And I think it was not long after.
It was a strike that lasted 7 years.
Yeah, and after that, I have a vague feeling that that was when Vesti sold out of Australia. Vesti owned a huge amount of land up there, and I think that's when, after that, the Vesti family or conglomerate sold out. Mm.
But the Gurindji's complaints included low wages and poor conditions. So what's new? It still hasn't been resolved. But the focus of the campaign moved from workers' rights to land rights. And land rights had been part of the Indigenous political actions before. You know, there's been the Yirrkala Bark petition that we talked about recently, 1946 Pilbara walk-off. But the protracted, high-profile and ultimately successful Gurindji strike is a foundational moment in the Aboriginal lands rights movement in Australia.
It's still, and the fight's still going on, of course. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's not stopped.
But nowadays in Northern Territory, more and more, large percentage of the defined area of Northern Territory is now under
Indigenous control.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say ownership, but no.
Control.
No, control.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's getting back to our very first opening remarks about the government. I see that Mr. Morrison has made Mr. Abbott the ambassador for Indigenous affairs or something or other.
What a wonderful person.
Yeah, something
what
like that.
What a prize.
Yeah.
Appointment.
But
an envoy. Wow.
An envoy. Yes.
Oh, envoy.
But he's very keen on Aboriginal affairs is Mr. Abbott, so maybe it'll get him out of the way.
Well,
make him go out the country a bit
more.
Will
he be able to get around?
Why?
Because I heard some time ago we built an Abbott-proof fence.
And we were talking about that last week too.
Thank you. Always, your knee must be getting better, Phil.
Well.
And your brain from your cold must be working too, because that was very clever. Yeah, but it's still going on. You've still got we've said it many times about the Uluru statement from the heart, that Mr. Turnbull just said we're not going to do anything about it. But I don't think Scott Morrison...
That'll come back. That's not going away.
It shouldn't go away either.
Yeah, it'll come back when there's a decent government.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you realise how they required their staff, their Aboriginal workers, to live corrugated iron humpies without floors, without lighting? There's no sanitation. You had to go and dig a hole in the back block somewhere. There's no furniture or cooking facilities. We were just treated like dogs, one of the people said. We were lucky to get paid the 50 quid a month that we were due, and we lived in tin humpies that you had to crawl in and out of on your knees. There was no running water, the food was bad, just flour, tea, sugar and bits of beef like the head or feet of bullock. The Vestey's mob were hard men. They didn't care about us blackfellas.
Phil, Chris, that also gets back to the fact that they felt that that was the way the tribal indigenous people lived, because they had the Maya Mayas and what have you, where they, which was their shelter.
Humpies.
Yeah, and they were just, that was all they deserved, you know, and they could cook over an open fire and all this sort of nonsense, you know. So that's they were trying to take them back to where they would have been had they been living in their natural environment, which is pretty shocking when you, and then they were great horsemen, of course. Once they learnt to ride a horse, they were great riding horses and rounding up the cattle and doing everything, but treated like dirt. Yeah, not nice.
On the 29th of August 1958 was born singer-songwriter Michael Jackson.
Oh, little Michael.
Now, he's been and gone from our world, but not from our lives. He was totally incredible. When he was a little youngster as part of the Jackson 5, his career started and he was an extrovert.
I reckon that the Jackson 5 were great when he was in it, in the 5, yeah. They were all pretty talented people, but I think just little Michael just jumping around in the bottom was just made that group. It really did.
But Michael himself won the title of King of Pop, and he was recognised by the Guinness World Book of Records, Book of World Records, as the most successful entertainer of all time. But when he died in 2009, there was much dispute about the way he died and where he had got himself to in life.
He had a very, I reckon it must have been quite a sad life, really, because, you know, he did that, all that whitening of the skin and all the rest of what said.
He didn't have a childhood because he was working from the age of 13.
That's right, yeah.
They played ABC, or one of his very early hits, on Spicks and Specks, and they had to announce to their younger audience that Michael Jackson was, in fact, a young black man, even though he died as an old white woman.
Yeah. Sad but true, sad but true.
Yeah.
Power, power, it's the power.
with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. On this day, or roundabout, on the 24th of August in the year 79, a town in Italy was destroyed as Mount Vesuvius erupted.
Now, are you saying 79 like 1979, just abbreviating it?
No,
very indeed. Early calendar.
Anyhow, but the town we're talking about, of course, was Pompeii, which went kaboom. Well, it didn't go kaboom, it got flattened, actually.
Mount Vesuvius went kaboom.
It did indeed. As you say, there was a little town, Pompeii, at the foot of the volcano. And we've seen pictures recently in Hawaii how molten metal magma from the centre of the earth can run down. It wasn't that that actually killed the people in Pompeii. And it wasn't the big clouds of ash dropping over on the people.
No, it was more like Mount St. Helens in Washington State, where there was a cataclysmic explosion. And it's like a boiling hot wind. So it's probably not visible. It's not full of ash yet, because all of that would follow. So these people sitting at their kitchen tables in Pompeii would have been fricasseed on the spot.
They'd be almost like having their breath sucked out from the heat.
And there's not time to run or anything like that. Because I've seen some of the pictures from the site. And it looks like they've been fossilised sitting at a table. Surely you would have got up and, you know, had a look out the window. But well, they've since proved that it's so hot and it's so fast that it just would have wiped them out.
It was very quick, of course. Once those things start, they just go bang and that's the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not unlike some of the scenes from Hiroshima, where there's literally a nuclear shadow. You can see where people were standing in the street because their shadow is there and the body's gone.
Well, on the 6th of August 1945, that occurred as part of war when the American Army or Air Force...
Enola Gay was
playing.
Yeah.
Little boy.
Yeah, something like something that.
Something like that, yeah.
The first atomic bomb.
I was in Tokyo 40 or 50 years later, 1985.
Yeah.
And I saw the news coverage on TV. You couldn't understand a word because I was staying at a Japanese business hotel instead of an American tourist hotel. So it was all in Japanese, but you couldn't help but feel very Western when the bombing was shown and all the footage of the time. And it was really quite a spooky feeling to be the only white man in the building. But at the same time, I was quite innocent. I did not drop the bomb.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, that's it. 74,000 people were zapped and just fried, as you said. They were shadows on the wall afterwards because of the ferocity of the actual blast.
But then more than that died from the after effects of the atomic...
Of the radiation. The
radiation.
Precisely. What a nasty device is the atomic bomb. Huge death toll.
It's also remarkable that there were, for many years, people who did actually live on, who were in what you would call the danger zone.
But they eventually succumbed to the radiation sickness.
I guess, well, yeah, but you... Some people, you know, would have died at that age anyway, but there were people that were just so horribly disfigured. And they sent in American doctors and scientists to examine the victims after the bomb because they'd never had anything like it before. They just wanted it all documented, which is just so cold. And
yeah, but I suppose in a way the people were the guinea pigs and they had to find out what the bomb had done. And now that's why so many of us live in fear of atomic war. And the nuclear war is what it would be. It's not a little gentle, safe little thing. No. When these bombs go off, it is nasty, nasty, nasty.
Don't know how many people caught it, but last week on SBS they played War Games with a very young Matthew Broderick, who starts the country's main military computer in a game, and the game is thermonuclear war.
Oh, nasty.
And it starts launching or preparing missiles for launch and all sorts of things because it missed the fact that it was a game and the computer was playing for real.
Mm.
Very good film with a very cute young Matthew Broderick, who I may have mentioned earlier.
No, we could see the sparkle in your eyes, Phil.
But the good part about the movie is that Matthew was playing a game, he thought, with a gaming company in Sunnyvale, California, which is where I lived when I was over there.
Can I just also remind you, over the weekend just gone, we were told of a report of some gamer in the US who lost at the game and turned around and massacred
killed four people.
Four people, and then killed himself.
No, I think
I suspect he wouldn't have done. No, I think he was self-inflicted.
Did he? But oh, right.
Can you imagine if he wasn't able to get a gun? How much safer that country would be?
Wow. What a good concept. I wonder if anybody's thought about that.
They have, and they're laughed down by the people who like wearing short sleeves.
Yes.
The right to bear arms.
You get a mileage out of that each time.
You're listening to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9.
On the 31st of August 1997, Diana, Princess of Wales, was killed in a car crash in Paris. And that was, well, as you would expect, totally unexpected.
But boy, didn't they go to town with that on the news. You know, like
she
all things.
She was the people's princess.
Yeah, yeah.
She was an icon for many, many people. She had the two young boys, Will and Harry. They were, what, just nudging teenage, I think, at that stage.
Yeah.
I think one was 13 and one was 11 or something or other.
There was the funeral. The event was really avoidable, it would seem, because she was in the car with her boyfriend and the photographers, the paparazzi, were chasing them, and somehow the Mercedes got out of control and crashed.
But there was also somebody was saying that the driver, he'd been drinking alcohol or something.
Could well have been, but, you know, it's events.
It was meant conspired. To happen. One of those things that was going to happen anyhow.
Mm. And
like what they say about air crashes, it's not just one single cause.
No.
It's the coincidental occurrence of lots of little things, and then you've got a catastrophe.
When she was princess, she was actively involved in a variety of charity work, and among her most noticeable achievements were her assistance in the campaign against landmines, a cause which won the Nobel Prize in 1997 in tribute, and helping to decrease discrimination against victims of HIV/AIDS.
She was one of the first people to go in and shake the hands of an AIDS victim.
And that was recorded
on TV. And people sort of went, oh my God, you know.
If Diana can do it, we can do it.
Yes. Yeah. But she had also must have read all she could find out about the disease and realised that she couldn't get it being a blood-borne disease. It was fine, as you could shake somebody's hands.
But the stigma was very, very powerful.
Oh, it still is.
And it's the fact that she physically touched them, I think, brought down more barriers than other efforts.
And it needed someone like that to do it, to make everybody realise that you could actually be compassionate. We all knew about it anyhow. We were touching them and all the rest of it. We knew that there was nothing wrong. It took that to make the ordinary people in the street to know that it's fine.
Mm. I think also it was an opportunity for a generation to see public outpouring of grief. There were people wailing in the streets, and there was such a connection between the person who died and the people, and it was just an unbelievable situation that a lot of people found themselves in. It was grief. The song Candle in the Wind was written as a tribute to Norma Jean Mortensen, better known as Marilyn Monroe. But for Diana's funeral service, Elton John reworked the words to reflect upon Diana. Anyway, we'll catch up with you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.